Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. If you find that this poetry show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everyone's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase them, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex.
Evening.
How's it going?
All right. Not bad.
Awesome. Awesome sauce. It's going to be a great night of poetry. We've got carryovers to delve into, which offers us up some diversity. And after the carryovers, we will then go into a write inspired by the artwork of Leonora Carrington. And then, just in case they were needed, but most likely some of them might get carried over to next week, I ran an 8 spots only contest with a quote from Leonora Carrington, which is, the task of the right eye is to peer into the telescope while the left eye peers into the microscope. And, anything exciting or interesting happening?
Not a thing.
You know what? Not a thing here either. I mean, you know, unless you consider snow exciting or interesting, which I really don't. It was funny at the on the last show. The dogs got set off, and then we played a SoundCloud, a poem by Stelina called "The Naming of the," was based after T.S. Eliot's "The Naming of Cats." And in the beginning of the SoundCloud, she has these cats meowing, and Richard said his cat had this like reaction, this bug-eyed reaction to like, what the heck is going on? And Miriam's cat was looking around, and I was honestly surprised the dogs didn't get set off. I mean, it was just so funny to hear about all the different cats reacting to the sound effects in Stelina's recording. Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. I have to say, all in all, honestly, I don't mind a slightly boring life because, you know, you just never know with excitement what'll happen. But anyways, so, well, why don't we go ahead and since, I guess neither one of us has much to chit-chat about, get this ball rolling.
All right. J1 by Charlie's Waiting. Born on J1, look out from Iron Baby. Maybe Mr. Might start that again. Born on J1, look out for Iron Baby. Maybe my kryptonite, I'm inert. Talking crazy lazy. Plan A, no prastigation. Fill every need, time passed, booster blast, superhero deed. The problem, I'm like the Tin Man from Oz, a no-tech exec that didn't do that because Apollo had more computing power than me, so it's highly likely I'll be resorting to Plan B. Try to do it, but if I don't, it's not a big deal. Like last year, if nothing else, I'll keep it real. People will say, oh, Iron Baby, he's so cute. I hope I don't boom boom in my new suit. May need a trapdoor waste removal unit. It might get messy, but I can fine-tune it. Soon I'll be zipping around saving the day. I'll be super surprised if it lasts past May. And boom.
Great read, Rex. And this was one of the carryovers from Gene's content, the Twisted Sisters, Which Baby New Year Will You Choose? And she had a bunch of pictures of the different baby Avenger characters. And, Charlie's Waiting obviously chose Baby Iron Man. I thought this was just a clever and fun write. I liked his attention to detail. I thought, they're just really smile-inducing lines that show that he either knows the character or researched the character. I did appreciate and enjoy the line. The problem, I'm like the Tin Man from Oz, an old tech exec that didn't do that because Apollo had more computing power than me. So it's highly likely I'll be resorting to Plan B. My other favorite part was I just had to laugh at people will say, oh, Iron Baby, he's so cute. I hope I don't boom boom in my new suit. May need a trapdoor waste removal unit. I tell you, the number of diapers I have changed in my lifetime, I'm thinking maybe a trapdoor waste removal unit wouldn't have been such a bad idea. Now that I think about it, now that I'm talking out loud, I'm thinking, probably a bad idea because that would put a lot of mess on the floor. So, but definitely a fun write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, it does. It walks in that note of a brand new year and the growing pains within that new year. And running it off by Iron Man was pretty funny. I did like that. Although it took me, all right, where the hell is this going? Then I get down to, all right, yes, I get it. Last two stamps is kind of hit off that note, because even with the I'll be super surprised at last film May kind of note. Yes, once you get onto solid food, it becomes a little more defecatingly rude.
You right? Exactly. Yep. Yep. I have to agree with that. Great comment, Rex. All right. What do you got for us next?
Yeah, should have learned to dance. My name is Sarah. What's yours?
All right. And this is a carryover from our Break On Through show where we had the quote, never give a sword to a man who can't dance. And it goes like this. She stood before him, sword in hand. He, the mightiest warrior in the land, he sneered and belted out, how dare you affront me, you minuscule, feeble lass? Do thee not know who I am? I have trained with the most notorious swordsmen. I carry the largest sword and the strongest shield. The girl glared at him without backing down, a David before a Goliath, brave and proud. As the giant cobra recoiled to lash out and bite, she jumped out of reach, swaying, bending, thrusting forwards and back in a graceful play, awaiting patiently the moment to ricochet, leap forward and swivel and strike. The overwhelming vanity of her opponent gave him a sense of false security that aided her course. As he swung out, she plunged, parried, and pummeled, her sword sliding easily through his torso, slicing flesh, muscle down to bone. They gazed for a moment, him in the horror and pain of defeat, and her in the satisfaction of victory. She withdrew her blade, and his crumbling legs could no longer hold his weight. And just before he drew his final breath, she whispered, you are tall and mighty with the largest sword and strongest shield, but you should have learned to dance, my lord. You should have learned to dance. End poem. And wow, what an epic write. I really enjoyed that one. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, why don't you hit it right up front, the David and Goliath angle. It doesn't take the, it's not always the biggest that wins. It's how you work within the realm of the arena that you play within. Kind of reminds me of Bruce Lee back in the day. He was small, only weighed 130 pounds, yet he could always drop his opponents because he took everything into account. He learned ballroom dancing, boxing, plus the martial arts. He used everything. He was the MMA king before MMA was actually a real motif. He took everything into hand and how to use it to his best advantage. And that's the idea that Naomi's running in here with. It isn't just because you're big. You're big and wieldy, yeah. But also limits your how you move. And when somebody who's a little bit more nimble on their feet, the thought of thrusting and parrying, so to speak, as she hits them here, is that angle of knowing when to throw a punch or run a sword, so to speak. And it is just a little bit. You take it piece by piece until you finally come to that ultimate conclusion, the coup de grace, as one would say, when it comes to bullfighting in the arena, that final plunge.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Rex. Great observation. I like that, and I have to agree with you that the way you compared it to Bruce Lee and the way that he was a small man, but he knew patience, he knew how to move, he knew how to use his moves and his body to his advantage. So I thought that was a really great comparison. This is definitely a great David versus Goliath, right, with a twist. I like right away she develops the character's personalities. You know, you've got in the second stanza, you've got the braggart. And then you've got the girl that the first she doesn't even actually speak until the very end. You know, the girl glared at him without backing down, and so you see that she's brave. She doesn't back down, but she doesn't feel the need to brag. I also like that she used fighting techniques. To describe the fight scene and the way that the main character, the female character, has had the patience to keep an eye on her opponent and to study each move. I like how she wrote about how the overwhelming vanity of her opponent gave him a sense of false security that aided her course. And, of course, that ending was great because it tied it right into the prompt but gave it the character's own unique voice. You were tall and mighty with the largest sword and strongest shield, but you should have learned to dance, my lord. You should have learned to dance. Just wonderful lines, very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Ice, to hold and to thee, by M. Sai Uno the Don. Sometimes I think I lose it, of what I usually do, to be good to you. But in the take of the run, my words forget to sum, the way of the deer, where hope and love is the respect of the near. I feel as if it had come to the way of the moon walking around the sun, never matching hope in the designation of the broad, because I have limits and tear, wherefore I now truly hear. The loneliness besets, but it is not in my importance of the hats. I take it down because you were the beauty of the crown. And if you have shed a tear, know I am forever indebted to the scent of you near. But this is not where I am, neither to what I desire to stand. It is in wish for me, dear, to have you the world come down to you near. But in the middle of the scene, I have spoken because you were somewhat like my queen, and I had not to do the forfeit which holds in the sentiment of the orth, location, placement. For I came to in a scent, wherein you have my heart in your hand, wishing to let off go of a worries wherein you are in a hold, for light as a feather, should you feel the more in a better, that the sun may rise to shine, and you may be forever in the scent of the peaceful mind, to hold and to have. And Paul.
Great read there, Rex. And this one was a carryover from Solace of Shadows Cold. I thought this one had wonderful imagery and metaphors. M. Sai always has a unique style, all his own. And, I felt like this... spoke on the idea of remembering to express thoughts of love held in, but there was, a real depth of thought to it. I really like, I feel as if has come to the way of the moon walking around the sun, never matching hope in the designation of the broad, because I glimmered some tear, wherefore I now truly hear the loneliness beset. But it is not in my importance. I take it down because you are the beauty of the crown, and if you had shed a tear, no, I am forever indebted in the scent of your near. I like how it speaks on loneliness, and it speaks on hope, and it feels like an individual who is seeking that, as it says, that peace of mind. I guess it kind of feels like to me, like the idea of somebody who who life feels in that moment so cold to them and so bitter, and yet they know that somewhere out there there is that peace of mind, that love that they want to grab onto. So excellent write, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
This is someone who's not quick-witted in the moment, so to speak. They know what they want to say, but they don't know how to present it in the moment. That's what that first stanza is about. And so this is a thinking piece. It's what's going on in the mind while trying to figure out how to connect the voice with the thoughts. And somehow it doesn't come out, but the wish is for it to somehow be offered in a way that that conveys his thoughts, because it does come off as a little tongue-twisted here and there, and I think that's because he can't make the connection between the voice and the offering of words. So it kind of tends to sit within his own mind as that silence of thought that he wants to offer but does not how to convey that which is already sitting within himself.
I like that thought. And I kind of like the idea of getting tongue-tied.
No, it's brain-tied, because the mind knows what it wants to say, but the words never come out as what's in the mind. It might come out as a jumble or the stumbling attitude that comes with it. So it's a loss of words, because somewhere the mind and the voice don't connect in a plausible manner.
Aphasia, that's what you're thinking of, right? Aphasia? Yeah. It's like that, speech disorder where the brain knows what it wants to say, but it won't come out of the mouth.
Right.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, great comment, Rex. And what do you got for us next?
The Fever of Late December by Figuring It All Out.
That's a cool name. And I hope eventually she does figure it all out and shares that with the rest of us, because I'm still lost. All right. The Fever of Late December by Figuring It All Out. Through the wreathy rowans on the day after Stevens, a gentleman's shadow bobs before the distance. The billowy fog is assumed to be lifted. A clearness is meant for the afternoons. Could that man be picking daisies so early after Advent? The hazy motion of his arms dictates the horizon and places the pale sun far away. Would he greet a passerby so soon after crocheted gifts have passed hands and the fever of late December sunk in? A wry smile tries my mouth, twisting like a twig bearing the weight of a fat robin. Walking reveals dull roots, stale bark, no bright hello. A silver tree is mistaken for a man, and it's still a tree so soon after Christmas. End poem. What an intriguing write with really thoughtful imagery. And your thoughts, Rex?
It offers up a note of perspective. It's everything is not what it seems. Just because you can see something, it's a matter of where you sit within that perspective and what is within the surroundings itself. Because the Fever of Late December offers up that note of winter. So everything is a little bit different. The air offers up its own touch of perspective, because it's chill and cold, and your vision narrows somewhat, or might even offer up a sort of a little extra water within the eyes itself. So you get a little blurred note. But I like the vein of thought that rolled through this, the walk itself, and that walk offering up a different perspective based on distance. And all of a sudden you come across that what it is you thought was someone, but it's actually a bare tree offering up itself from some distance away, and yet the mind conjures up something else on that winter day itself. Maybe it's because, you hit on that note, the fever of late December, so maybe the fever of late December is coming out of sickness and being able to go outside and actually breathe something else other than one's own sickness, or maybe it's just getting into the fever of December where you're pent up and you're tired of being pent up and you need to go out and breathe a little bit more freedom than the home itself.
Absolutely. Yes, I can definitely see that. And I like that you used the word perspective, because it really does have a lot to do with that. I like the imagery in this. I like how it can be taken literally and very relatable. I think we've all had that happen to us, especially as you were mentioning, Rex. Winter does tend to play tricks on the mind with the interweaving of shadow and light. I mean, and even, it's so easy, especially if you're in a room filled with shadows or there's dim lighting or it's, dark outside, for the mind to play tricks, it's also an interesting write on the idea of how the human mind works and how when we can't see the full picture, we fill, our mind fills in the blanks with what it thinks is facts, but later realizes that it isn't. I really liked, as I said, the imagery in this, and I like to ask questions like, could that man be picking daisies so early after Advent? The hazy motion of his arms dictates the horizon. And I think that line there kind of gives you a little clue that it's going to be a tree, but it's kind of like a foreshadowing where, you get to the end of the poem and you look back up at that line and go, you know what, that really does describe quite well the movement of tree branches. I like that there's that revealing at the end, and the idea that it was a tree mistaken for a man. And as you said, Rex, that idea of the difference between perspective and reality. So excellent write and very well done. All right, what do we got next?
Always the Villain by Nick Garrison. On the outside, I looked like the villain, inspiring fear in every man. They couldn't fathom the reason I do it. They cannot see the master plan. The peasants fear what I have done, all those tiny little ants. If only they knew my glorious purpose, they'd rally with cheers and chants. Alas, I am Loki of Asgard, and I shall never have their love. But this is still my burden to bear, saving the realms from up above. And Paul.
Great read, Rex. And this one was one of the carryovers from the contest that I ran for Twisted Tuesday, which was quotes by Loki. And he wrote to, I am Loki of Asgard, and I am burdened with glorious purpose. I thought this had wonderful rhyme and flow. An excellent knowledge. I would either already received knowledge or, of the character and the character's personality, or that he did his research, but I'm guessing he already knew it. I really like how, because to me, if you're going to write about a well-known character, whether, it's the Loki from the movies or the Loki of mythology, which obviously slightly interchangeable, but slightly different. You have to bring it out in a new way. And I think by choosing to do this in rhyme, he takes a well-known character and gives them a bit of a fresh glossing over, a fresh look. And I like that he captures the Loki attitude in The Peasant's Fear, What I Have Done, all those tiny little ants. But it then also captures his more human side of, and I shall never have their love, but this is my burden to bear. So excellent, excellent right on always being the villain, no matter how one tries to prove themselves. So very well done. And Rex, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
It's his embrasure as a chaos agent, because he does work on both ends. He does for the gods, and he also rebels against the gods. So he is that chaos, that note to chaos that inhibits everything, because he doesn't bend totally to anyone's will and does interject himself in indifference or deference to certain attitudes being drawn. So that is, and it's different, actually sitting the, he's sitting there always the villain, yet he offers up that note, saving the realms from up above as a note to the bottom angle, but he's really more mischievous as well as malevolent. So not really one to actually offer up saving anything from up above unless it suits his purposes.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, that's one of the reasons I really liked the character of Loki, and you make a great observation there, Rex, is one of the characters, the reason I really like that character is because it's layered. You know, he's not always the villain. Sometimes he's almost like an anti-hero. It's really about, you know, how you said sometimes he will rebel against the god. And so, great comment. All right. What do we have next?
Great Planet Loki by Betty Page.
All right. Get me out of here, all of this Loki planet, and off this Loki planet. Voices are crazy, loud and obnoxious. Analytical reasons back and forth and back. Constant babbling, diagonal left, straight right, secret hideaway, so many mutants, nonstop chatting, so insane, driving me crazy. Vividly I see all of these versions of me, so many timelines, gotta get away, run, jump, fly, get out of here, any way I can. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, it can walk a couple of ways, I guess. It can work on that note to the internet, the idea of all the insanity that goes back and forth. And it also hits on the thought of multiverse, being able to see inside that realm of 100 of you strewn across 100 different realms, all the same person, yet in each universe, they're doing something just a little bit different from the previous. So you've got 100 of you, and they're all doing something you would have done, but you wouldn't have done it in the world that you originate from. So you've got 99 more illusions of what you could have, would have, and may have done, all rolling at the same time.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, I can definitely see that with both of them. I know she mentioned that she was inspired by a certain episode of Loki and to write from his point of view, and I think she did that really well, but I do think there's also that extra layer to this write that does speak on the idea of how overwhelming society can be nowadays, because everything is so fast paced. Everybody's always got to be on devices, on social media, and you know, there's just it feels like, I particularly like the line "constant babbling," You know, the idea and nonstop chatting, so insane, driving me crazy. It really feels like that whole idea that nobody is, and I shouldn't say nobody, but, you know, there's so many people out there who just want to constantly, you know, be moving, constantly be talking and chatting and socializing, that it almost gets to be overwhelming to people who are introverts. But I do like how she wrote from the perspective of Loki, and always, as always, just great imagery and very well done. So, and what do we got next?
The Oven of Eternity by Liquid Mind Forever. Feast your eyes upon what implodes, outwardly explodes from lack of quid pro quo. You chose to leave home to know the flesh, all its sensations, exponential equations. Did I stop you? God forbid. I usurp free will through you still distill till fill reaches its zenith. As you fell more in love with technology than with caring and sharing, serving and loving, your hearts turned to stone. Without heat in your ovens, you had no bread to eat. Your feet planted to cold tile beneath mega screens. You grew your mind into even larger megawatt machines, lean and mean. When brother at brother, when sisters by the ankles of slaves, not other for sustenance, all semblance of humanity disappeared. Veneered vanity, your calamity. Revered profanity to insanity. Years turned to centuries. More years, no beers, no birth on generation of Earth, nothing worth the girth and dearth, no mirth. From planet to planet you stole life forms, abusing, refusing, amusing, your icicle fangs hang upside down, now renowned aftermath. Caverns of rock crystals formed your living rooms, your tombs you consume blood, your soulless lives thud, cruds deep, dark mud. In time, boredom sets in and more theft. More slaves, more bloodletting, getting you nowhere, spurred on and on and on, till all semblance of life and love gone, until you became robotic metallics, highly skilled technofreaks, geeks, leaking iron. No sex, no food, no love, no children. And then when your hearts and souls become the den of iniquity, you turn to me obliquely, meekly asking for a new game for shame. And now what remains? Beyond the games, what's maimed and tamed? Who can you blame, too ashamed to feign sorrow? You implore, seeking to borrow sympathy and becoming a new tomorrow. I am here, but you have chosen your lot, your Sodom, your pillar of torment. Therefore, I will not circumvent, not reinvent your species. Blood sacrifice went out with the New Testament, but you defile my innocent child. Meanwhile, under stained teeth and crumbling reefs, you must wait. As I have done for millennia, there shall arise a new idea, a new creation, a plutonian indestructible size heart, the oven of new life and new love, and in soulful obedience will be the heat of divinity I send down from above. And poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex. And this was such a powerful write by Liquid Mind Forever. I thought it had strong imagery and metaphors. It had a strong voice within it. I like how it spoke to me on the idea of, it was a very hard-hitting write that to me spoke on the idea of the morals of society falling apart when technology becomes more important than humanity. And you really see the loss of humanity and the loss of the deeper meaning when you see your hearts turned to stone without heat in your ovens, you had no bread to eat, your feet planted to cold tile beneath mega screens. You grew your mind into even larger megawatt machines, lean and mean. When brother at brother, when sisters bled ankles of slaves, none other for sustenance. You just get this idea of people using each other and society falling apart. She's got great use of not only imagery and metaphor, but inner and end rhyme. I also really liked, you know, we're spurred on and on and on to all semblance of life and love gone until you become robotic, metallics, highly skilled, techno freaks, geeks, leaking iron, no sex, no food, no love, no children. And then when your hearts and souls become the den of inequity, you turn to me. I like how this speaks in the voice of a god or a higher power, or maybe even about Mother Earth herself. And the idea of people who nearly destroy themselves and then expect someone else to save them. It's definitely a powerful rite and very well done. And you did an excellent read of that, Rex. Your thoughts?
Well, the oven of eternity and the opening up hits on that idea of the universe itself. It is what happens in the throes of the star's death, that supernova that actually sends forth that idea, that those the molecular angles and the all that forms life itself into the universe, spreading it across everything until it finds a place to take hold. And then it hits on the idea also that second walks in that note of kind of a Terminator angle being let loose, the birth of a new generation of Borgish behavior, which then evolves into full-on machine mechanicals and the death of humanity because of with the idea of machines now being sentient enough to recreate themselves, there is no need to populate by the old manner of procreation, and it kind of dies out. You hear that sort of no children, no sex, and all that kind of walks on that note of people's depictions of the graves. No obvious genitalia, so no thought to how they might actually reproduce themselves. And the idea back on down this to with the God angles, you've done this to yourself, and once the machines have nothing left to give themselves fair balance in life, a new form will be met, and that comes from the oven of new life. That would be, again, the start of the universe offering up its molecular advantages across the universe, and you will be replaced.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Amen to that. Well said there, Rex. All right. And what do we got next?
2023's Love of Nature by Pink Fairy.
All right. 2023 ushers in the new year with a love of nature, bringing in a sense of normalcy and relaxation, garnered by oak trees, vulnerable but kind. She is pure as clean water and new mushrooms. There is no urgency about her. Unhurried, she flows as a light breeze. 2023's Cupid brings innocence and purity to the earth, closer to world peace this year than we have to 100 years. Sprinkling acorns, mushrooms, and violets into the minds of the masses, Cupid brings us into a Zen normalcy that smooths fears and soothes souls. 2023's Cupid is a sigh of relief. There is no pretense or big show or showdown. She lives her truth and lets each of us live ours. Love, joy, and peace permeate our soul as we learn to simply relax. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Reinvention. Instead of offering up the thought of thoughts, promises of what one will do to improve themselves for the new year. Kind of offers up the thought of not reinvention, but rebirthing, the idea of coming into the world anew, and that being a fresh, clean world and fresh, clean thoughts, and the idea of walking a different simply by taking in those trees, the fresh air, going about unhurried instead of at a fast-paced trek through the ease of speed, just slowing down and taking life for what it is instead of making life for what you want.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that thought, and very cool. Great comment. I thought this was wonderful personification of the year 2023, and I like that there's such a sense of hope in it. You know, like I don't know if it's necessarily reality, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with delving into a world of hopefulness, you know, especially when what you hope for is that kind of love, peace, and understanding. I like that she saw Loki as a Cupid. Like, I thought, you know, I like when people look at a prompt and put their own creative twist on it. And this was fun to read all the way through. But my absolute favorite was that second stanza with the imagery of sprinkling acorns, mushrooms, and violets into the minds of the masses. Cupid brings us into a Zen normalcy that smooths fears and soothes souls. You know, very comforting lines there that just kind of make you smile. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
The next step requires Form A1 WD-40 by Tom B. Regulation provides prediction. The more we can contain chaos, the greater the opportunity to feast upon the body. Every opportunity needs the frame of proportion, the clear insight of value. Politics provides discourse, does not interfere with process. Maintenance, consistency rise above destiny to provide predictable safety. We are the reason freedom is an ideal people try to achieve without anyone being infringed in their right to their own ignorance. We do not participate in endings, nor will we incur the responsibility of beginnings. Our paperwork ensures continuity, the interminable guarantee there will be another form to fill out. End quote.
Great read there, Rex. Could I ask you to go ahead and comment first, please?
I guess. All right. Now, the bite in Form A1 WD-40. A1 hits on that sort of offering up something a little tasty to make the swallowing a little bit easier. And the WD-40 hits on the idea you've got to squeeze in a little bit of lubricant to actually make it work. And that's the idea it hits on is regulation provides prediction. The more you regulate something, the harder everything gets. The harder it makes everything to get done. Why? Because you're regulating something that should not be regulated. Therefore, you bite into the notion of providing freedom to actually make something work in a way that it's supposed to work. And the bite in this provides discourse, does not interfere with process. That's supposed to be it. Maintenance consistently rises above destiny to provide predictable safety. Again, you can offer up all manner of thought as to what this, that, and the other, but you don't actually understand until you put something in and all of a sudden you find out, yeah, we kind of shit on that one hard because not only does it not work, we just made it very difficult for everybody. Uh, the thought of people having freedom is that notion of, yes, there is voices to be heard, and there are. Even in freedom, you can have ignorance, and that is something that goes along with being free. It doesn't mean that you sit there and shut everybody up because they're a little ignorant. Hey, you know what? Even from the ignorant, a little bit of the pastiche and jewelry comes across it. All right, most of what you said was stupid, but that one little tidbit actually has a little bit of shining in it. The idea of endings and beginnings, it's on the notion of bureaucracy and how within bureaucracy we're given A1 so that we don't taste the bland bullshit of that bureaucracy. And the WD-40 is squirrels upon us so that we can be squeezed into every particular framework that is offered, and thereby guarantees we will always have one more form to fill out, one more position that we have to hurdle across because we have this idea that we wish to put forth, which will benefit, yet the benefit never comes because the idea gets really expensive down the line, and all of a sudden we are thrust in the thought of offering up that which we know will work, but we'll have to wait 50 or 100 years for somebody else to put it out there because the machine is always favoring the machine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. And yeah, great observation. I really enjoyed this one. I really appreciated it. I actually gave it the gold in the contest. And he wrote to the quote, "You ridiculous bureaucrats will not dictate how my story ends." And I thought that was just such a perfect Tom quote. Like, it was definitely one that I thought if Tom was going to write to this contest, it was going to be that quote. I thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors. I did have to laugh at the WD-40 part because, you know, it's that, like you said, that extra lube to the process of getting screwed over a little easier. I really liked the social political commentary on this, how it spoke to me on, and that was a thought-provoking, right, with hard-hitting lines that kind of spoke on the idea of trying to find that balance in a society system and how it's an evolving process and that, you know, how unfortunately because of bureaucracy and because of, you know, hypocrisy, that doesn't always happen. I like that you mentioned in your comment, Rex, the idea that you can listen to other people and not agree with everything they have to say, but you might find that shining nugget of wisdom if you just take time to listen. I like this all the way through, but a particular line, politics provides discourse, does not interfere with process, maintenance, consistency, rise above destiny to provide predictable safety. We are the reason freedom is an ideal people try to achieve without anyone being infringed in their own right to their own ignorance. You know, just amazing lines and very well done. Very well done for sure. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
A Teaspoon of Olive Oil Slides Down My Neck by Freya.
All right. So, here we go. I came to see her artwork, braille-like, eyes closed, tip of my tongue, massage each fold of brilliance. I love her creative mind, without judgment, and with flower petals. She invites me to enter the warm bath of her thoughts, in the intimacy of her studio. A teaspoon of olive oil slides down my neck, over cataracts of ribs, across the socket of my hip. Your big, unblinking eyes watch with such stillness, I get a little nervous. I feel like a balsamic spinach salad ready to be pulled into the beautiful antechamber of your mouth, musical resonance of your voice, altar of smile that turns me to strawberry jello. When the shiny trail of anointing reaches my foot, you lay me down and brush your exquisite lips along my instep. You sense the cascade of erotic heat waves with simple, direct movements of your hands across my soul nerve endings. I begin to slowly leave my body as your creativity lifts me beyond the silver corona of my hair, moving as if in etheric water. I become your creation as you restore the years the moth has eaten. My tears dissolve, cynical crystals lodged in capillaries of memories. I am created in the art form of your holiness poem. And that is just absolutely just stunning imagery and metaphors. Before I ask you for your thoughts, Rex, I'm going to go ahead and bring someone on. I'd like to welcome Robert to the show. Welcome, Robert. Glad you could join us.
Hello. You're going to have to excuse me. Hey, Rex and Pam. You're going to have to excuse the noise in the back. Sometimes there's going to be somebody randomly spouting nonsense. So.
Well, you know what? I am always randomly spouting nonsense, so it'll fit right in.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to have you here. And Rex, your thoughts on Freya's poem?
Well, that first one offers up almost a clinical look at feeling in the moment. I came to see her artwork, braille-like, eyes closed, tip of my tongue, massage each folded brilliance, the thought of a looking I'd left her created mind without judgment. And with flower petals, she invites me to enter the warm bath of her thoughts in the intimacy of her studio. It's as though she's actually walking into and watching the creation itself in the moment. Then everything else unfolds, but that's second stanza. It's short, but it hits well with the perspective of what she's seeing. A teaspoon of olive oil slides down my neck over cataracts of ribs across the socket of my hip, a sort of a feeling evolving from the note of the eyes and walking along her body itself. I feel like a balsamic spinach salad ready to pull into the beautiful antechamber of your mouth. Again, offering up perspective of someone who's older in nature, but all of a sudden is feeling themselves walking through almost the age of her life itself, from birth through the wonder years into teenage, and then all of a sudden experiencing life in a very different manner. And that bottom end, she finishes out, I became your creation as you restore the years the moth has eaten. My tears dissolve, cynical crystals lodged in capillaries of memory. I am recreated in the art form of your holiness. There's a note of rejuvenation to the mind, the body, the soul, the thought of, hey, you know what? If I can enjoy this as to what it does for me, then there are still things in life that I can experience and enjoy itself.
I like that thought, and I like that you brought up the idea of going through the different stages of life and realizing that there's still things to enjoy. I thought this was a beautiful write with like wonderful subtle sensuality throughout it. I also thought it amazing imagery and metaphors, was very layered. Some of the different thoughts I had on it was that, first of all, it delves into the sensuality of the creative mind expressed through art and the connection between the creator and the art itself. I like the spirituality in this, but I think also what I see in this with the idea of the oil and the direct movements of your hands across my soul's nerve endings, you know, and the spelling of souls, S-O-L-E-S, like about feet. There's almost this idea of going to a massage therapist and just letting yourself give into the process of being healed by somebody else's hands. So beautifully written and very well done. And Robert, did you have a chance to read Freya's poem? Are
Sorry,
you on mute, Robert?
Yeah, I was, but it's because my hand twitches sometimes and I can't click the button correctly. So from what I've got to read of it and from what I've heard of you guys, I really enjoyed her use of metaphors like the foods and things like that. Even the title itself, a teaspoon of olive oil slides down my neck. That already starts off, you know, like, oh, that's kind of, That's kind of a little bit sensual there, like when you think of the imagery. And then all throughout, like she just keeps like peppering, well, no pun intended, but she's peppering like, food all throughout the poem. And like you said, there is there are undertones of sensuality, and there's also like a progression of sorts, like Rex was saying, like from one phase to the next, and then it just keeps evolving into something that in itself is artistic, but is also paying homage, however you want to say it, to the art itself. So I thought it was very awesome.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Very cool comment. Yeah, and you're right, because it does play an homage to the art itself. So great observation. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
Ouija by Damn It Dave. Last night I played with my old Ouija board, and sure enough, I summoned up a ghost. She brought with her a little demon horde, and I admit that I became engrossed. The spirit had some damage to one eye, and in its hand it held an ebon rose. The demon horde did naught but mew and cry. They looked like kitty cats, but then, who knows? They could have been some lemurs or some rats. It's hard to say since they took spirit form. I didn't stand too close, as I hate cats, and God forbid those things begin to swarm. The ghost just stood and never said a thing. I spoke to it, but it stared into space. And when it moved, I gave the board a fling. They vanished then and didn't leave a trace. I checked the house and turned on every light, then spread some salt to keep the ghosts at bay. It's fair to say I didn't sleep last night. I threw that blasted Ouija board away. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. And, you know, it's always so much fun to hear a poem, a story poem by Damn It Dave. And Robert, your thoughts?
Yeah. I second that. Like, Dave is he's excellent at telling stories through his poetry, and a lot of times he adds humor to it, or at least, you know, tinges of it. And in this one, it's no different, you know. Like, the ghost just stood there and never said a thing. I spoke to it, but it stared into space. And then when I moved, I gave the board a fling. Then they vanished then and didn't leave a trace. But that closing line is a word of warning. I checked the house and turned on every light, then spread some salt to keep the ghost at bay. It's fair to say I didn't sleep last night. I threw the blasted Ouija board away. You shouldn't have probably messed with it in the first place, but yeah, I've always had like, I don't know if it's a fear, but kind of like I don't know. I always have like this ominous feeling whenever I was near or even hear about it. So I can understand the curiosity and the playfulness in here, and I also understand the warning, like, hey, you know, you shouldn't be dabbling in this. So yeah, thanks Dave, that was great.
Yeah, I have to agree, he does add nice touches of humor, but you're right there. I do think people need to have a very healthy respect for like Ouija boards. And yeah, I like that you pointed out that word of warning comes at the end, which is, you know, always a great place to put it after you've learned the lesson. But great comment. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Robert hit that well on the head with that, because look at that first stanza. Finishes out, and I admit that I became engrossed. The idea of, yeah, it's, you don't actually believe, but you want to play. You're curious. All of a sudden, you become engrossed. Then things start to morph. You hit that single, that end on that second line. It held an ebon rose. Well, there's a note to, yeah, you should have stopped right there, but it didn't stop right there. Then the sort of the demon horde did naught but mew and cry. They looked like kitty cats, but then who knows? The idea of morphology walking in then. And then, as well as hating cats, but then again, all of a sudden, everything turns into mayhem as they start swarming. Nice touch there. And that, you're right, the thought of offering up salt to keep the ghosts at bay, as well as demons and whatever else comes in, well, you made the bloody invite, and now you might not get rid of them, even if you get rid of the boards. You might be walking on that threshold of, you shouldn't have dabbled in the thing in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Amen to that. Well said there, Rex. I'm glad you brought up that part about the demon horde, because that had to have been one of my favorite parts as far as like dark humor goes. The demon horde did naught but mew and cry. They looked like kitty cats, but then who knows? They could have been some lemurs or some rats. Like, I don't know, it just cracks me up, the idea of someone looking at this demon horde and trying to decide if they're lemurs, rats, or cats. Yeah, great words of wisdom at the end, and the idea of learning from experience, and just a creative take on the prompt. So very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
We have A Forest Song by Scott Sharp and the SoundCloud.
All right. Let me mosey on over there. And here we go.
A Forest Song. Existence is light. Photons, particles, movement, sound, blending in a forest. The pianist pounding on the keys calls starlight into existence. The cellist, bow when grasped, pulls nighttime, pulls shadows across the river's bridge. In a trance, all life follows. From heaven and hell, horns blare. In the distance, mountains rumble approval. Then the harp plays. Silence reigns, and the glow of the stage fades. Midnight's curtain falls. Only the wolves' howl can be heard alongside the music of the cascading creek.
Great read and write, Scott. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then you can we can hear your poetry in your voice. And Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
Well, I don't know the piece in reference to this, but this is what you go with, a symphonic arrangement that's played out nicely, probably for a play or some operatic value. But this is what you walk into when you can actually close your eyes, and each instrument adds a new tone of existence into that which is already going on. The pianist pounding on the keys calls starlight into existence. And the cellist, the thought of the horns offering up its own thought, and the mountains rumble approval, the idea of big bass drums in the background, then the harp. Silence Reigns and the Glow of the Stage Fade. There's a nice touch with that little gentle music in the moment. But that last one, Only the Wolves Howl, you get that lone call, maybe a bassoon. And then you hear that little touch to finish off alongside the music of the cascading creek, kind of hints at the note of the pianist finishing out with lightly tinkled notes, offering up that thought of the creek rushing through the forest itself. So I like this is someone who can actually sit and listen to that music and see each piece as it rolls into the next and offer up that which they see in their mind's eye.
Yes, yes, exactly. Great observations there. And, yeah, I really like how it rolled forth in the manner that it does. Great comment. And, Robert, your thoughts?
Well, I think that this kind of takes a page out of the Pink Floyd book, whereas you're just, like, so into the groove. Yeah, like, just deep into it. And you're just so all about – the only thing that exists in that moment is you and – the music, and I thought it was a phenomenal presentation of that, like, especially Existence is Light, Photons. It starts off particles, movement, sound, blending in the forest, and then it goes from the pianist to the cellist, and then it gets grandiose to where it includes, you know, heaven and hell, both horns blare in the distance, and the mountains rumble in approval. So, you know, I thought it was just created very, like, majestic and like I said, grandiose environment with the weight of the awesomeness that was there. And then it ends up, like, kind of digressing, like, to where it just all ends up, like, coming to silence, and then all you hear is the wolf howl, and then the creek, and then it kind of fades off. So I thought that it set up, like, a chain reaction of awe in my mind anyway. So I appreciated it.
Oh, absolutely. And I like that. You know, I think the comparison to listening to Pink Floyd was awesome. And, yeah, it does reach a crescendo and then quiet down with, as both you and Rex pointed out, the music of the cascading creek. I like that this speaks on listening to the experience of listening to music, but I also like that it speaks on the music of nature and the way that everything is connected and dances to that music. I really like the cellist bow and grass pulls nighttime, pulls shadows across the river's bridge in a trance. All life follows. I like that there's that connection between life and music and between music and nature. So beautifully written lines and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Beneath the Glow by the Poetic Philosopher. And Robert, would you read that book, please?
I will try. Beneath the glow of the lunar eclipse in the sky, a goat was passing by, stopped as summoned for a foursome music crew playing a bleeding song. Some stray dogs as vocalists were hauling along. A dead pale man was playing harp with a deer on top, wearing boxing gloves. The conductor, meanwhile, a poet, was scribbling to release himself from this inspiring psychedelic dream and poem.
Great read, Robert. I really enjoyed this write. You can tell, like, to me, it seems like the Poetic Philosopher had fun with this one. And what I like is that you could tell he really studied that image and took every little morsel that he could out of that artwork. And the idea of describing the artwork, which is so surreal, you know, made me think of fairy tale, Bremen band, the animals that get together and form a band and then scare this guy. It made me think of that, but it's very surreal. I really like A Dead Pale Man Was Playing Harp with a Deer on Top Wearing Boxing Gloves. And then the transitional line to the end with the question, the conductor. And then it's interesting because the first four stanzas are what the poet is looking at. And then he brings it back to himself with those closing lines. Meanwhile, a poet was scribbling to release himself from this inspiring psychedelic dream. It's always amazing where you can find inspiration. I thought this had wonderful imagery, and I really like that he dug into the artwork and wrote about the inspiration of poetic psychosis. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, if you notice, he dropped in that last couple lines, but he's also in the pic itself. He's center stage up top. You see those two eyes looking on, and everything else is kind of a little bit of amazement. So I'm kind of hitting on that idea of mushrooms, peyote, or LSD, and he is dabbling into the visions that were created while on that trip. So, and considering you've got the deer on top wearing boxing gloves of a harp when a dead pale man, a dead pale man, yeah, and it's called the boxing gloves, but the thought of adding a little bit touch more, plus the baying dogs as offering up the vocals, yes, you're really walking on the ship side of that fantastic evening drawn through your mind by.
I like that thought. And yes, I have to agree with you. That artwork definitely looks like somebody was tripping on shrooms. What particularly creepy to me is that goat. I don't know why, but that goat is particularly creepy. But great observations there, Rex. And Robert, your thoughts? And your thoughts off of mute. Oh, he says he, I'm sorry. Job. Okay. Yeah. He said he'd have to call back. Okay. That he couldn't hear, so he'd have to call back. And so what do you got for us next, Rex?
Twice, Please by Julie Butts.
All right. Twice, Please by Julie Buck. Why so puzzled? It's just the two of us, dumber than pet rocks, blow you with a fuzzy dandelion that won't let go. Dude, your radar's off. Oh, wait, was it my turn to read?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay, well, let me start over since I asked that question in the middle of reading. I suppose I shouldn't have even done that. Okay, my apologies. All right. Why so puzzled? It's just the two of us, dumber than pet rocks. Me wanting this white dove to blow you with a fuzzy dandelion that won't let go. Dude, your radar's off. White doves mean freedom and new beginnings. But bro, that's bullshit. Hence, why here we sit, cough, cough, sneeze, sneeze. Starting a new year without her here is wrong, says my traveling wheeze. The sooner we can admit to being stupid, the sooner we can commit to a nice little antihistamine buzz. But freak bitch, wait, I got something better. Want to see what it does? Yes, twice, please, and poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
All right. Kind of hits on that note of misery loves company, because you got the two of us, dumber than pet rocks, me wanting this white dove to blow, you with a fuzzy dandelion that won't let go. And the thought with the antihistamine buzz, so, they're kind of stuffed up, and the antihistamine is kind of clear the nose, yet the offering on the back end of it is, but freak bitch, wait, I got something better. I want to see what it does. Yes, twice, please. Kind of hits on that note. Yeah, I just cleared my nose now of ease. Now I want to inhale a bit more of what you're offering singly up each side. So, yes, I want the buzz.
Absolutely, yes, yes. I could definitely see that too. But yes, you're right. Misery does love company. And welcome back, Robert. Did you have a chance to read Julie's poem?
Yeah, I did, but I wanted to do a small comment on the last poem too, because as soon as you said, so there was one word you said, and then as soon as you said it, I couldn't hear anything after it, but. On the Beneath the Glow piece, I really appreciated that, and I was going to say, since you guys know the poem, that this seems like to be the opening act for the Deep Purple poem that I wrote the other day. This is pretty awesome. I really like psychedelic poetry, so it's that's pretty cool. As for Julie's poem, Twice Please is funny because there is, for one thing, there's two of them, so I guess they're double dabbing, so to speak, and I like the playfulness of it. Like, it's like, dude, your radar is off. White doves mean freedom and new beginnings, but bro, that's bullshit, hence why we're here. Cough, cough, sneeze, sneeze. You know, I really think that it's like kind of like a just two stoner things or beings, I guess, stoner-esque, I guess, just barking with each other, and it's funny, the banter back and forth, and then, like Rex said, they kind of wanted to free up their nostrils for something else, so that's always interesting, and the way that she put it was hilarious, and very thought-provoking, considering the picture, so thanks for that, Julie.
Oh, absolutely. You can tell she had fun with this. And yeah, it is almost like a whole, like if Cheech and Chong were to snort lines of coke instead of smoking pot.
In the afterlife, yeah.
So great comment. All right, Rex, and what do you have for us next?
The Weird Sister 3 by Liquid Mind Forever. And who shall seize the throne but one who gnaws the gristle at the bone? Home alone, unable to atone, she'll moan, out, damn spot. And who shall prophesy and who'll be king? A witch's brew they knew he'd misconstrue and pay per view in lieu of too true. And what insanity belies behind the mist? A tryst he's missed while vistas new, divine to bind but aligned triune bliss, unholy trinity. And come by night on winged flight, despite your pet rite of passage fright, uncouth lies truth without a shroud, forever proud, out, damn spot. And who goes mad, and who goes madly insane through pain, vain remains her disdain, her gain, attained by foulest play, away, 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 damn spot. And who shall lie in shallow pits, unfit for man or beast, the least of men again, portends the three witch sisters, and so we say, amen. And poem. Okay.
Yeah, that was quite a trip in itself. I'm wondering if Spot is the actual goose or in there or whatever that is, like spiritual chicken. I can't tell what it is, but it looks like I don't know if they named it or what. They just call it Spot, but from I I do appreciate the intellect in which she uses to construct the, you know, this poem. I just have to admit that it's beyond my pay grade as far as mentality goes. Like, I can't comprehend a lot of it. But I do like her word choices. I like her rhythm. I like her structure. But I have a hard time, like, on the first read through, really comprehending the depth of her work. So, but I do have to say that from what I got out of it, it was pretty awesome. Like, I like, for example, and how you read it too, you read it very well. It says, "And what insanity belies behind the mist, a tryst he's missed while vistas view, divine to bind, but aligned tree and bliss in the Holy Trinity." And you speak of the Unholy Trinity, you see the triangle pyramid there, and then the three witches, and then there's three birds too, or actually there's five, never mind. But yeah, there's a whole lot of threes in this picture, and for her to pick up the Unholy Trinity, I think that's pretty clever that she threw that in there. So yeah, that's my thoughts on it. What about you, Rex?
Oh, that was actually really good. I had to go back and look at the picture to take a peek behind it. But I'm going to – this is something intonational with that first stanza. "And who shall seize the throne but one who gnaws the gristle at the bone? Home alone, unable to atone, she'll moan. Out, damn spot." The out, damn spot, the reference to Lady Macbeth. But also here, the out, damn spot kind of hits on that notation of a little blood spilt on the bed, so to speak. And then again, that second one, "Prophecy who became witches brew that they knew misconstrue, and pay-per-view in lieu of too true." The idea of pay-per-view, watching something that you have to pay for. So somebody's looking in on what is going on in the first stanza, but they're paying to view it. Whether it's live or not is another thought. And the insanity in that next stanza, and the divine, divine, but aligned, triune, bliss, holy, unholy trinity, there is a kind of quiet thought of looking too deeply into something, and all of a sudden that arrangement becomes a little unholy in its speaking. It's kind of, it offers up the thought of something dirty, something illicit. And then again, out damp spot again. And then who goes madly insane through bane. That kind of hits on a little bit of, let me see, maybe, oh, I'm not quite sure on that one. And it hits on between the last one off of that, "And who shall lie in shallow pit, unfit for man or beast, the least of men again, portends the three weird sisters." The thought, the closing angle of this, "And who shall pipe?" The fall of the woman herself from the first stanza. She's in the bed. She's actually offering up that intonation of maybe first blood, so to speak. And now it's gotten to the point at the end where she is no longer fit for anyone. And the thought of the three sisters offering up that amen is, ah, we have come to a close, and everything that we have chosen to offer up as that notion to the scenery you see is the delineation of the woman to begin with. The freshness, the wholeness is now been besotted and bespotted, and we have done our job.
Yeah, I was going to say, you dug quite deeply into that one there, Rex. That's awesome. Very cool. Very cool. I'm not sure I can add a whole lot to that. I did enjoy and appreciate how she used the backdrop of Macbeth to convey, to me anyways, the thoughts of those who see the downfall of society. And I like how with, at first it says out damn spot, and then the out is gone and there's only damn spot, and the we say amen Amen. You know, this is a wonderful imagery, inner and end rhyme. You know, I really like the lines, and come by night on winged flight, despite your rite of passage fright, uncouth lies, truth within, a shroud forever proud, and who shall lie in shallow pit, unfit for man or beast, the least of men again pretends, the three weird sisters, and so we say amen. I like how it almost, like the mention of the rite of passage, it feels like almost ceremonial-like in its idea of transitioning, of the transition from being young women to the elder witches. So excellent rite and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Asylum by Cedar Chapman. And Robert, this is made for you. I think you're going to enjoy this one.
Oh, a treat, eh? Okay. Asylum by Cedar Chapman. Luna smothers me with her crimson veil, my cornea singed by her blood moon eclipse. Loneliness weighs on my skull like a lead thorn crown, a relentless drip that chokes my lungs and renders me a stringless marionette, drowning in an icy red sea. I'm trapped in a carriage drawn by centaurs. Its one-eyed horseman drags me to an abandoned cobblestone street and tosses me to the gutter by a stairwell. Gray vermin donning ruby Windsor knots crawl over my limp body as I lie lifeless like a meat crucifix. They stare into my eyes, taking pleasure to sniff me, to lick me, while they fantasize, gnawing on my entrails and sucking marrow from my bones. Three wise men wearing silk cowls chant in unison. Their faces, faceless midwives, dance side by side, swaying their linen robes, while they strap my ankles and wrists in preparation for the Scorpion King. He scurries on top of my bound torso and stings and inseminates me with his euphoric venom. Bethlehem's star shines bright. Snug in my manger, I float past, snatching it from the night sky. Heat radiates my face. It's the kind of warmth a baby feels when nestled against her mother's breast. The kind, when absent, tears away flesh and sinew, leaving us as skeletons to be eroded by the wind. My pupils dilate. I exhale a deep breath. My fists clench tightly against my chest. I am never letting go. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Robert. And yeah, I have to agree with you, Rex. That was a great choice because it was perfect for Robert's voice. I really liked the imagery and metaphors in this. It was powerful. It was a beautiful and haunting dark rite about the overwhelming struggle with not just depression, but it just like downright psychosis. I really liked the way that Cedar really dug into the artwork and learned about the artist. You can really see that in parts of his AN, like when he mentions that Leonora Carey's artwork is abstract and open to multiple interpretations. And then he also says, I've included references to many mythological and religious symbols to relate it to the Christmas season and to pay homage to the artist who often included mystical creatures in her paintings. I thought that was a wonderful attention to detail and amazing imagery. I like that right away he starts with Luna smothers me with her crimson veil. So it's not just the idea of the moon. It's the use of the word Luna, where lunacy comes from, is a great choice. And very visceral imagery, gray vermin donning ruby Windsor knots crawls over my limp body as I lie lifeless like a meat crucifix. You know, within that imagery and within those lines is the idea, on within these lines is the idea of somebody who no longer has any control, not only over their mind, but also over their body. So excellent, right, and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, that third stanza was, I like the thought in that one, gray vermin dawning, ruby winds and knots crawl over my limp body. Gray vermin, the thought of a gray rat wearing ruby Windsor knots. That's quite the vision. Something with a tie kind of crawling all over the body, like a lifeless, like a meat crucifix. I like that sniff to lip. That offers that sort of, there's a little bit of insanity going on right there with other things, whether they're actually vermin themselves or just someone who's so far detached that the people that are actually crawling all over them in the moment appear to be that notion of vermin, and they're trying to steal something from me. The three wise men wearing silk cowls chanting unison, that hits on the idea of doctors in the moment, ankle straps and wrist in preparation for the Scorpion King. I like that thought. But it also, that can, as far as this goes into the madness of someone, this also walks along the madness of somebody who's so far deep into addiction that this plays out in their minds until they get that next fix. And that next fix offers up right there. Bethlehem's star shines bright. Snug in my manger, I float past, snatching it from the night sky. Heat radiates my face. It's the kind of warmth a baby feels when nestled against her mother's breast. The kind, when absent, tears away flesh and sinew, leaving us as skeletons to be eroded by the wind. That walks wholly in addiction, both inside and outside the thought itself. And then the dilation, I exhale deep, my fist clenched tight against my chest. I am never letting go. That euphoria, taking a note and embellishing the body, the mind, the soul in the moment. But it works on both angles. For the insanity, it's a great piece walking into Bedlam, and it's also a good piece as far as Bedlam, where addiction strolls through, because you're waiting for that next fix that you can get into that realm once more.
Very cool observation. I like how that you brought up, and I have to agree, I can see that now, that it speaks on also on the idea of addiction and the madness that comes with the need for that next fix. So great comment. And Robert, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, like Rex was saying, I think those the people, the three wise men, were the doctors. And Bethlehem's star is probably that light that they use when they do surgery, I think, like how they move the light and it just shines in your face sometimes. I think maybe that could be what they refer to as a star, because it says it's the kind of warmth a baby feels. So the light being in your face would make you really warm when nestled against their mother's breast. So, you know, I think that could possibly play into what Rex was talking about. And the Scorpion King sting, I think, is probably when, you know, someone is overdosing as well. They do that needle in there, and, you know, to get you back heart beating again and stuff. So adrenaline shot or whatever it is, I can't remember. But I know that maybe that's the sting that they felt in the chest, you know, is the stabbing of the needle. And, you know, I like also, like Kelly said, Luna, and it represents, you know, lunacy, but also, you know, lunacy, like a sea of red. So I think that plays in there well as well from the first stanza. So he did a great job in using this metaphor, which makes everything make you take a step back, and it's detached. And then once you put all the pieces into play, it begins to make more and more sense. And I really appreciate his genius in that regard, and his word choices, obviously, like Bethlehem Star and then the three wise men, almost like creating this you know, like how he said, this is at Christmas atmosphere, but so much darker. And I really, really appreciated that. And thank you for letting me read it.
Absolutely.
Damn, great analogy there.
That was. It really was. Great observations. Very cool. All right, Rex, what do you got for us next?
Surreal Scenery by Betty Page. Yours.
All right. Wild green serene scene, whimsical birds flying high, twirling towards blue skies, swans swim round cool lakes, gliding swirls, decadent dance like the nutcracker, squirrels race up tall trees, jumps from branch to branch, nibbling on walnuts, black stallions roam free, prancing round blue waterfalls, bathing in rainbows. Kittens tumble round, playfully biting, pawing, purring with delight. Puppies bark with joy, chasing birds and butterflies as dragonflies zoom. Deer quietly watch off in faraway mountains, sips on clear rivers. Snowy owls glide, drifting above mist stars, deep blue universe. Wolves howl at the moon. Crescent Cheshire cat shaped melodies fill skies. Oh my goodness, that was like such a buffet of imagery to take in. It was just beautiful. Robert, your thoughts?
Yeah, as I said, I love Betty's work, and her format is still impressive, her being able to stick to it throughout the entire poem and yet create such an environmentally sound piece. There was so much nature in this, like snowy owls glide drifting above amidst stars, deep blue universe, and wolves howling at the moon, and of course, a Cheshire cat. It was obviously a good touch. But the thing that really stuck with me was puppies bark with joy, chase birds and butterflies as dragonflies zoom. Now, you guys would not know me as a very uppity person, but I do enjoy nature in a lot of aspects. And the dragonflies zooming by, I really kind of felt that, like as it was happening and as Pam read it. And of course, who doesn't love kittens tumbling around, you know, playfully biting and pawing, purring with delight. I mean, this is just a really, like, a piece that makes you smile if you think about every stanza. Like, every stanza that, as it progresses, you just, like, if you think about it, you can't really help but smile, right? And for me anyways, and I don't smile often. So I think she did a great job in conveying the beauty in nature in her work.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right. It is smile-inducing imagery with the kittens tumble around. You know, the funny thing about Betty is I have read two poems of her tonight where she uses kittens, but in two completely different matters. So the last poem was she was an obedient kitten, always obeying, and totally
oh,
different
man.
Tone. Totally different use of the word kitten. I like the creativity that Betty puts into her imagery. And great comment, Robert. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's that opening stanza that kind of sets the pace. Wild green, serene scene, whimsical birds flying high, twirling towards blue skies. And she finishes off on the sky that soon. Melody still sky. So the offering is there might be music involved, but she's hitting on the idea of nature offering up that music. The swans swim around cool lakes, squirrels race up tall trees, black stallions run free. It's all about the sound of nature itself. What you hear from the birds, what you hear from the swans, the squirrels, the chittering, the black stallions, the hoofs hitting the ground, the kittens, playfully biting, pouring, purring with delight. Everything walks in sound. It's a nice touch to ease in the moment. The beauty in that sound offering itself up as a melody. If one was attuned enough to actually listen to nature as it sits rather than trying to create nature for your own use. The thought is, hey, get outside and listen to nature as it is offered to you in the moment.
I like that thought, Rex, and you're right. Rather than, you know, if you have the opportunity to, you know, rather than watch nature on a screen, you know, get out there and as you said, you know, become involved, you know, get absorbed into nature and, you know, the music of it. I just thought, yeah, this has delightful and creative imagery all the way through. It's an escapism poem. It's a poem that allows the mind to escape into a land of playful magic and music and into the playfulness of nature. I really like squirrels race up tall trees, jump from branch to branch, nibbling on walnuts. Black stallions roam free, prancing around blue waterfalls, bathing in rainbows. Just wonderful imagery and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
A Handyman's Artwork by Poetic Creations. Cataforms, Cataligraphy, Anti-Grotesqueries, Esque Felis, Biomorphic Humanoid Cataclysmic, Blue Shadows, Unremitting Time Squared, Pessimistic Personalities Exist, Only in Despair, Weeping Pastels, Petal Prim, Pity to Suckers, Cataloging Apparitions, Apparently Astonishing, Barely a Handle on the Situation Unfolding, Signs of Sign Language Are Everywhere Silent, Peace Symbols Plastered Over the Odyssey, Gold is Useless in Every Kind of Hairy Situation, Eyes That See in the Night Be Blind in the Day, Only Wisdom Overcomes Overwhelming Birth, and poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex. And Robert, your thoughts?
Well, it's not often that, you know, you see someone use biomorphic, you know, biomorphic in a poem, but his use of vocabulary, cataform, calligraphy, anti-grotesqueries, Esphelis, biomorphic, humanoid, cataclysmic. I mean, that's just like a whole mouthful of verbosity there. But, you know, blue shadows, unremitting time squared, pessimistic personalities exist only in despair. That one, I was trying to think about, because blue shadows, unremitting time squared. I'm trying to understand what he meant by blue shadows. Maybe like a sadness within a sadness, or like being sad and just overcome with darkness. Who knows? And then pessimistic personalities exist only in despair. So maybe it'll tie in with that. Weeping pastels, petal prim, pity to suckers. I like the alliteration there. And then cataloging apparitions, apparently astonishing. Barely a handle on the situation unfolding. Signs of sign language are everywhere, silent. And I can appreciate that too, because, you know, not everything you hear is true, and not everything you read is true either. So I like where he says barely a handle on the situation unfolding, and confused by the signs that are everywhere. So, yeah, that was my interpretation. I don't know. That was a good poem. Thanks, Picasso.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. There is this kind of idea of sadness, and he does have wonderful use of language, you know, and so great comment there. And Rex, your thoughts?
I think Robert summed it up good for that. Those last two lines, that first stanza, you're right on the mark with that. Blue shadows, unremitting time squared, pessimistic personalities exist only in despair. They kind of walk in on each other, so you're absolutely right. The pity to suckers kind of hits on that notion of sex stands of walking. You should be open your eyes to things instead of taking things as they come. And because he hits on that last line, that stands as well. Signs of sign language are everywhere silent. The idea of opening up your eyes to that's what you see, and noting what they are and not believing everything that you're being told, because some things get hidden in the morass of that which is being delivered. And you've got to pay attention, otherwise you lose it. And that ties into the despair in that second stanza. And then he finishes out with only wisdom overcomes overwhelming burden. Again, it rolls right back to the despair. And the only way to actually alleviate that despair is to actually look into and make your own decisions as to what is being offered and what you see, so that your interpretation is something that walks in alone in your mind, not someone else's.
I like that. Great thoughts shared there. I like how this does speak on that idea of learning to think for yourself, especially when it comes to your own happiness. I thought this had amazing imagery, great use of subtle alliteration. And to me, it was an excellent write that spoke on the idea of being aware of things that are hidden from the light, being aware of those things in the shadows that other people don't necessarily see. But I like how you both brought up the thought of how not everything you read or hear is the truth, and you have to learn discernment. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, what do you have for us next?
Hands of Phantom Grace by Captain Kerr. And Robert, I think this is another one that you'd enjoy, so please.
All right, well, here we go. Hands of Phantom Grace by Captain Kerr. Black scorch marks of dejection, where I burn with pain's delight. What my shallow terms have bought me fills the die my soul has cast. In the throes of trepidation, I have turned against the light, clutching runes with bony palms, tossing stones that read the past. I scribe a new venture, scribbling verses in the dust. I align the passing planets, influencing natal charts. Scorpio will be rising, that Saturn's foot will crush. The moon and Mars enjoining, lovely Venus bears my heart. Blending the earth-toned pigment, as the brush strokes flesh her face, with eyes of eternal softness and hands of phantom grace. My purple robe, the canvas, golden ruffles tress her hair, her temperate presence forming, shyly rising in the air. My subdued voice reciting from a stage of brittle clay, the Grecian props surrounding, ensnaring in cryptic haze. From an arc of ocean's blueness, dry mountains cleave the sky. I step to be her lover and touch the trembling waves. Fomenting her with kisses, I release the woodland hare, caribou and the stallion, the blue ergot and the mare. But her lips are coldly pressed, the warmth I craved has fled. I lie in odd containment, rehearsing with the dead. My breastbone hardly breathing, I retreat back in the dark. She calls, her eyes entreating, with a voice of goody praise. I sing to her my love song, with my notes of C minor sharp, embracing empty visions, strumming stringless harps. End poem.
Great read, Robert. And what a beautiful write by Captain Kerr. You know, I always enjoy and appreciate his writing, as he's a wonderful rhyming poet. And Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
All right, that opening stanza kind of gives a note to who and what he is. I'm going with the sort of a magi. I scribe new adventures, scribbling verses in the dust. I align them, passing planets, influencing natal charts. Scorpio will be rising, that Saturn's foot will crush. The moon and Mars rejoicing and joining, lovely Venus bears my heart. Venus offering up that note to the morning star, but also everything else that rolls in is, it kind of hits on that, because he hits on my purple robe, the canvas, golden truffles, tress of hair, her temperate presence forming, shyly rising in the air. It's kind of, he's giving birth to the note of because he hits on the animals in this. I'm going with Luna, the moon, and then wanted to embrace and offer up the kisses going there, but it doesn't happen because the moon needs to be in the sky, and since the moon is that that walkable entity that kind of actually speaks to the animals themselves, the stallion, the blue eagle, the mare, the woodland hare, and even the goddesses of the moon, they offer up that reflection of being woodland deities. So then the back end of this, he offers up my breastbone, holding, breathing, I retreat back in the dark. She calls her eyes entreating with a voice of godly praise. I sing to her my love song with my notes in C minor sharp, embracing empty visions, strumming stringless hearts. A loneliness kind of walks in. He's left to be the background once more as he created her for something that he wanted, yet had to give her up as that notion to what the world needed in the moment.
Very cool. I like that. Really great observations on the idea of wanting to keep something for yourself, but having to give it up for the rest of the world. So great comment. And Robert, your thoughts? Oh, he had to go. I'm guessing he's not going to call back with only 4 minutes left. So I'll go ahead and comment. Wonderful comment there, Rex. Like I said, this is beautiful rhyme and flow, wonderful imagery. I like how it is that personification of the moon. But it also speaks on the idea, like, to me, it personifies the moon or personifies nature itself. I like how it also speaks on the idea of the emptiness of love rejected, or as you were saying, Rex, the sacrifice is made. You know, I really liked the imagery of this all the way through, but especially I scribe a new adventure, scribbling verses in the dust. I align the passing planets, influencing natal charts, and my schedule, my subdued voice reciting from a stage of brittle clay, the Grecian props surrounding and snared in cryptic caves. There's this idea of the way that the moon and the way nature speaks to the artist and the poet. So beautifully written and very well done. And, oh, Robert did call back. All right, welcome back, Robert. Would you like to make a comment on that poem?
Yeah, sorry, I don't know why it keeps doing that. For me, at first I thought it was about like an old astronomer who became like an artist or whatever, and he's basically describing a lot of his paintings that he's doing. For example, you know, blending the earth tone pigment as the brush strokes flesh her face with eyes of eternal softness and hands of phantom grace. Like it seems like he's like doing these, like he's narrating while he's painting, like what he's painting. Mm-hmm. And the reason I thought of the astronomy was because, you know, when you said, I align the planets influencing natal charts, Scorpio will be rising, that Saturn's foot will crush the moon and Mars adjoining. Lovely Venus bears my heart. So I think it could be a combination of those things. That may be a far reach, but to me, that's what I got out of it. Like it could have been told from the perspective of an astronomer that it was also an artist. So I really enjoy that his like the word usage, and I enjoyed like you know of the imagery is what, like, because I could see it all as a painting in my head, like my breastbone hardly breathing. I retreat back into the dark. She calls her eyes entreating with a voice of goodly praise, you know, like he felt that he did a good job that day. And maybe his muse was telling him that. So I thought it was great.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I like that. Great observations there. Very cool comments. Well, this has been an awesome show. I've really enjoyed myself. Thank you, Rex, as always, for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you, Robert, for calling in. We appreciate you. Thank you to Selena for hanging on the board and to everyone who wrote for the show, was listening while we were on live or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Join us tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. And, of course, make sure to keep an eye out on all the contests and topic boards put out by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night.